quinoa or teff or amaranth in Srila Prabhupada's service because they weren't available. But these are little seed grains and things that Krishna made that are now available for the whole world to use. And so I used those in his service. But I didn't because they didn't exist when I was serving Srila Prabhupada. So we can be open to those kinds of things. But so far as potato chips, I'm quite certain Prabhupada would have said, if you're making these for the pleasure of Krishna, that he would not ask you to open a crisp package and when they can be made, yeah. So the examples you gave are typical of, you know, all the kinds of things that are the little details that devotees will ask about. So I think it's best to check with your spiritual master for those that have spiritual masters. And for those that don't have spiritual masters, you check with the authorities and check what is the standard that we're engaging in this particular temple. And don't be surprised if you go to, you're traveling and you go to a next temple and there's some different standard. Those are the details and they're not so important. These are the things that are very important that we want to have established in all of the temples. Is that okay, Maharaj? Yes. Yes, Brahmacharyaji.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I don't know, maybe you already answered this question in a different way, but my question is regarding white and brown sugar. Mm-hmm. Using this in cooking, because again, it's different standards everywhere, but I just want to know what Srila Prabhupada is using.
Well, actually, white sugar brown sugar is nothing but white sugar with a little added molasses. So actually that's quite similar, but there are many different kinds of procedures for sugars, and there's many different sweeteners. For example, sugar can come from sugar cane, from sugar beet. There's sucrose, which is table sugar. Fructose is sugars from fruits. Lactose is sugar from milk. So there's different kinds of sweeteners. They're the saps that come from trees, like maple syrup and talgur. So there's many kinds of sweeteners. In the early days, again, you've hit it on the nose that there was really only white sugar and brown sugar. So when I was serious enough to ask, when I was inquiring a little bit, researching for the first cookery book that I wrote, second cookery book I wrote, I asked Prabhupada's sister Pishima when she was alive, and I was researching what was used 100 years ago in Bengal before refined sugars like white and brown sugar that were popular from the mid 60s on. Pretty much globally, because I thought, how can a rasgulla be white if you're using a dark brown sugar? So she said whatever sugar was there was used. So she, I don't know, she was from she lived in different places in West Bengal. So that's the answer. Prabhupada said you use it. White sugar was definitely used. Now we do have the choice of one stage less than this pure white sugar, which is pretty much, at least in the West, refined through, shaken through cow bones to bleach it, to make it white. So for about, you know, as long as I've been able to, I've been using something called turbinado sugar, or the brand name is Florida Crystals, and it's an organic a cane sugar, but it's not sparkling white. It's kind of amber colored, and it is not gone through the process of shaking through the cow bones. But even that was brought up to Prabhupada and said, what can we do? So it's available.
Thank you.
So it's again that principle, you use what you can, but you find the best you can. And now, I mean, for those of you who are just coming to Vrindavan for the first time, and you see what's available in the market, you see it's the world is becoming one big table. You know, you see you can get the same things here that you're getting in many other countries in the world. But originally the standard was in Goswami temples and Jagannath Puri and such, that you only serve the deity that which is available locally and fresh. You use those ingredients. For example, in Jagannath Puri, they don't use cauliflower or potato or tomato, because these were brought by the Portuguese to India. And they're not what's... So you find just those sabji that is available there. Even the kind of wood that is used to cook on is from that region. They won't use lal mirch, only kali mirch, no red chilies, because that isn't available from that region. So again, the examples are every temple, you establish some standard, and you honor your Archa-Vigraha, and you honor your spiritual master by adhering to that standard, and then letting that also breathe to some degree with ingredients, maybe. Or maybe you won't. Maybe you'll decide this is all we're going to offer. And why are we doing this? For the pleasure of the Lord. To honor the spiritual master. That's why we do these things. We establish these standards. Is that all right? Mm-hmm.
Okay. When one devotee goes to meet the relatives, and the relatives are not devotee, they cannot cook with the proper standard. What you should do, how we can show offer to Krishna these preparations.
Could you elaborate on that question a little bit, what you mean?
For example, I go to meet my parents. I have to cook there. But the pots, when I have to use the same pots where my mother were cooking meat. Also, because she is not the body, she desires the food. Because she make the shopping. Also, I can use just what is available.
Sure.
So, how is possible with this standard offered to Krishna? Offered to Krishna. I think that is.
These again are practical questions, and it's really kind of a common sense answer in that you do the best you can. So naturally, mother and father, there has to be some respect there. So many of us, when we associate with our family members who, you know, they've reared us and changed our diapers and done all this business for all these years, and we owe them back a certain amount of respect that we don't preach to them how nonsense they are in the kitchen, right? What we're talking about is amongst each other when we're serving the spiritual master or in the temple. But there have been many occasions where I went through a unique phase in about 15 years ago where after I wrote one cookery book, I was kind of launched into it's called the professional food world. And so I was invited to do many different cooking engagements. So sometimes, one time the city of Philadelphia in the United States, the mayor of Philadelphia wrote me a letter and said, please come and be a part of the Book and the Cook Festival this year. There's some restaurant we picked for hosting you, and will you come cook a meal there, and all the press will be there, like this. So it was a big function. So these people got a hold of me from a restaurant, and they weren't a vegetarian restaurant. So I said, well, you know, you may have looked at my book, and my book is about spiritual cooking. and I'm a vegetarian. And I said, I'm a really strange vegetarian because I have these unique rules that I follow in the kitchen. So I don't know how I could ever cook in your kitchen. So I actually started a dialogue with this. It was a bar and grill. And I started a dialogue with them, and you know what they did? I told them it has to be a separate kitchen. I won't cook if you have anything with eyes near me. So they cleaned, you know, they cleaned for 2 days, that kitchen, and put away all those things, and even put up a black plastic thing, So it, according to time, place, and circumstance, you just do the best you can. And what you especially do in those times is go internal. All I did was pray, Prabhupada, here somehow, maybe these people will never have gotten prasadam. Or maybe that's Prabhupada's kitchen in his apartment, and then to the right is a bathroom, and then another door off to the right is a bedroom, and then there's a little front room. And in that room, I couldn't adjust to it, but I learned later that there were Radha Krishna Archa Vigraha in that room. And as you know, sometimes when you're first coming to Krishna, you can't see Krishna. Sometimes you see Krishna immediately. Some devotees walk in to a temple and they see the deity and they know from the last life, oh, this is where I'm meant to be. They become devotees on the spot. And then some people can be around the deities and all they see is the flowers. They don't maybe even see the deities. So I was one of those people. I didn't see the deities, but they were in the room on a shelf. Of course, they weren't dressed, but they were there. So on the floor, there was a bag of flour, 5 pounds of flour, a pitcher of water, and some butter, no ghee, just some butter. So Srila Prabhupada, he said, can you make a medium hard dough? So I said to Srila Prabhupada, I called him Swamiji. They said, well, what do you mean a medium hard dough? And he said, how old are you? And I said, well, I'm 25 years old. He said, you're 25 years old and you can't make a medium hard dough? He said, any girl 5 years old in India, she can make a medium hard dough. So immediately I'm a little nervous. I'm a little put off. Very nervous. And he said, and then he always said that way after sometimes a little being pointed, he said, never mind, I will show you. So how many here have made kachoris? Raise your hand, please. So you know that kachoris are not an ordinary pastry. They're very unlike pastries in the West. A pastry generally in the West is defined as being made with a light hand. That means you do not need a pastry dough. You only mix the ingredients together, handle them as little as possible, and then roll them out. The only exception to that, or the main exception, is something called strudel dough, which is sometimes from Greece. Greek dough, because it was called phyllo. So the kachori dough was very unusual for me because, as you know, kachori dough is kneaded to become elastic, and then it's fried. And by frying it at just the right temperatures, for the right amount of time, the heat allows the butterfat content, as it's mixed with the gluten in the flour, to turn into layers, lovely flaky layers. And those layers are buttery, they're never greasy. A good kachori is anything but greasy, but just flaky and unusually delicious. So, but I had never seen such a thing. So Prabhupada very deftly and expertly made a kachori dough. Then he gave me the job of assembling alu kachori. So I was with Srila Prabhupada for about from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the afternoon, about 6 hours making kachoris and stuffing kachoris. And everything that could go wrong went wrong that day. While Srila Prabhupada single-handedly in the kitchen made 13 dishes for 40 people all alone in the kitchen, he would bring out dish after dish. My first big faux pas was after an hour or so, maybe an hour and a half. I said, Swamiji, may I have a cigarette break? So it was the galley kitchen, and he poked his head around the corner and he said, go wash your hands. So this is the beginning of the hand washing. Day one, day two in the kitchen, go wash your hands, is practically the first instruction I got from Srila Prabhupada. So I went and washed my hands. So at this time, Srila Prabhupada began to reveal the four rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness. So sometime later, I said, Srila Prabhupada, may I have a glass of water? Or Swamiji, may I have a glass of water? Go wash your hands. Number two. So then he tells me a little bit that this is not ordinary cooking, this is cooking for Krishna. And when we cook for Krishna, we don't eat anything, we don't taste anything, we do not allow our senses to enjoy anything. So later in the day, it is getting very hot, it's a hot day. And I'm perspiring, and Srila Prabhupada sees me wipe my brow of the sweat. Go wash your hands. So then he talks a little bit about this external cleanliness that we've talked about, right? This external cleanliness. We don't contaminate even our dress. You leave the kitchen, you take care of your business, you come back, wash your hands and begin. So it was interesting that in that very first day he gave me some little insight into respect, cleanliness, and a little of the rules and regulations of day one, day very early in the kitchen. All right, next instruction. Well, one should never wear shoes in the kitchen. So as you know, there are shoes that are allowed in kitchens in India. They're called kitchen shoes, wooden shoes, if they're reserved exclusively for the kitchen. Srila Prabhupada had a pair of wooden shoes here in Vrindavan that he used for going to the toilet room, one pair of shoes, and one pair of shoes for in the kitchen. The kitchen that Srila Prabhupada used when it was in the very early days of construction at Krishna Balaram Mandir. The temporary kitchen was in his quarters. To be honest, I haven't been in his quarters since I've come here. I'm waiting until day three, as I wish to chant a little bit before I enter those rooms. But you can help me with what it is. You enter through what used to be the servants' quarters, then you come into his living room. The room off to his right, or off to the edge, is his eating room. And that was where the Archavigraha, all the Archavigraha that are on the altar here now, were stored in that room. And then there was a little room that was off his bathroom. That's where the kitchen was. What's that now? Oh, his bedroom, okay. So he was, okay. So that was the temporary kitchen. There was nothing there, but on the ground, a little two-burner gas stove, nothing else. So, but Prabhupada wore little wooden shoes when he would come in that kitchen. The last sentence in relationship to this is, the purport of all kitchen rules, this is a good one, print this on your forehead, is that everything must be offered cleanly and only pure things offered. Now we're entering into purity. Now we're on sentence five of one letter from 1968. And purity is entering into the equation of kitchen rules. What are some of the definitions of what purity is in your idea in the kitchen in terms from siesta and jar?
Not wanting to steal anything.
Well, that's a given, yeah, that's a good one for sure. I think in the history of ISKCON there's been major leelas in that regard. Yeah. Don't steal. You don't want to steal anything from Krishna's kitchen. Well, that's Gunda mentality is definitely not a part of brahminical behavior for any reason. And it can enter in subtle ways, can't it? Stealing from Krishna before Krishna takes means that our senses aren't controlled, that we're out of control. Anything else? Purity? In terms of Prabhupada's early instruction, he said the devotee wants to try to find the best ingredients available to him to serve to Krishna. So, you know, sometimes we were in Vrindavan, there were many, many different leelas. One day was about oranges. Prabhupada wanted a good orange. And I tell you, we went to the markets almost one after another. Devotees were sent into Vrindavan to find a good orange from different stalls and come back and probably say useless. Then devotees went to Mathura to get oranges. Finally, devotees were sent to Agra to get good oranges, and all it was disgusted with them all. I think they were all from the same load or something, just distributed at all different places. So Prabhupada made us aware that we want to try to find the best we can. So it's a tradition in many temples in Vrindavan, and I'm sure it's been established in the Krishna Balaram temple that once a good supply of something is found, and I'm sure Prabhu has lived by that in the restaurant, once you find a good source for something, it behooves you to try to establish a good relationship with that to keep that source coming, and for you to enunciate the standard that you want the best quality that they can find for Krishna. So sometimes you can't get, and sometimes you can. And this is an interesting thing that, of course, since Srila Prabhupada has left, all of us have become aware of the fact that many of the things that are grown in the food chain that are offered to Krishna are grown with very harmful pesticides and chemicals added to them. So there's, on a global level, a desire for what's called organic or biologique in French, whatever language you speak. That means that we're trying to find the purest ingredients grown as cleanly as possible. One of the most beautiful things that can be done for a cook, and even as I've studied the food world and worked in the food world on a professional level, a five-star restaurant will always have their own gardens, suppliers for grains and vegetables and fruits, and won't use these chemical things that are grown with chemicals. And they're even not temples, but they try to find the best ingredients. So quality is really important. When we were studying Pradyumna Prabhu and I, deity worship at Radharaman temple, they explained to me that they would find a strain of wheat. And as you know, every year the crops are different according to the season. But once they found a strain of wheat that was acceptable for the Saivites, they would get together and get several samples of wheat. And then when they found one that was acceptable, they would buy vast quantities of that and store it for sometimes years. In Charanagati, where we live, we live in a place where there's no electricity. It's called off the grid. And without refrigeration, as you know, there has to be some storage. So we studied storage from the old days in the area we live, and we all have what's called root cellars. So you dig underground and make a large room. Our root cellar for Sri Radha Banabihari Mandir, where we are trying to engage in some services about, I don't know, in meters, I guess it would be 8 meters by 18 meters. And it's underground, and we have 4 tons of soft wheat and 4 tons of hard wheat that we've stored. And that actually, if it's stored properly, can last for hundreds of years. So that means that we found a wheat that was nice and we wanted to please the Lord, and we got it in massive quantities. So we tried to think of quality for the service of our deity there. So quality is important. Would everyone here like to try to think of that principle, these 3 principles of purity, quality, and cleanliness for the wherever you return to, wherever you're serving as a group, or in your homes, all so many grihasthas, there's about half here maybe that aren't grihasthas, but you can think of also wherever you live around the world, whatever temple you're serving in, to bring maybe these simple principles that Prabhupada gave us. These never become outdated. This is one of the things that no one can say, oh, in 1977 Prabhupada didn't talk about this, because he did. I talked with Dhamal Krishna Goswami and Bhakti Charu Swami and Yadavara. They were all cooking for Prabhupada in Rishikesh. You know what was really interesting? That some of the things that Prabhupada was teaching his sannyasin, 2 men and 1 grihastha, they were the same dishes that Prabhupada taught us to make in 1967 in San Francisco. So if somebody didn't know, no matter how old they were a devotee in one realm, Prabhupada didn't jump up to class 10 or 12. He started at class 1 again. Because that information is never outdated. Cleanliness, purity, and quality, they never become outdated principles of Srila Prabhupada. All right. Next point. The only thing is that whatever is offered must be offered with respect and devotion. Krishna is neither hungry nor poor nor unable to eat, but he accepts everything, the foods mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, when it is offered to him with 3 things: love, faith, and devotion. Now we come to consciousness. These 3 things, love, faith, and devotion, are pivotal, not only in the kitchen, but in every aspect of service to the spiritual master and whatever service the spiritual master engages us in for the pleasure of Krishna. Without any one of these things, there is a lack or there's a slowness. And all of us know that at different times we do fall behind in these things. It's very difficult to be conscious of this unless we're in a constant state of prayer. And sometimes while we're engaging in especially routine work, we're not. We're caught up in the moment, aren't we? Our senses are engaged in what's called more or less unconscious service. In other words, we're thinking of something else. But at the bottom line, love, faith, and devotion are the prerequisites for Krishna, for an exchange with Krishna, a loving exchange. Aren't they beautiful instructions? So important. So wonderful instructions. You know, Srila Prabhupada kept everything simple for us because of our conditioning. And because before he came, who came? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And maybe sugar. So that's what we used in Krishna's service in 67. The fruits and vegetables, we'd get sometimes the most bruised vegetables that we could in big... or what was later in London, it was donated things, going a little bit off. So it's really year by year by year that we're understanding the importance of the distribution of funds for the pleasure of Krishna. So at that time, there was probably money that we had that we withered away in something that we could have used to get something better, but we didn't have the consciousness. So Prabhupada gave us a hint in 68 where we're supposed to go. And we can only go higher and higher as the years go on. But unless we live, this is important, Prabhupada's words are there. We have his example. It's not enough to just talk about, oh, what Prabhupada did. It's not enough for devotees to sit up and have katha about the good old days. It's up to each and every one of us to make today the best day and be connected with Prabhupada by following his instructions, trying to live his instructions, trying to share his instructions, trying to taste the joy and the thrill and the inspiration of those instructions. So something as simple as this, you just, simple words, you get the best you can. So that means with your consciousness, with your money, with your words. That's it. And it's interesting, if you really go on a quest, like, and I spend a little time in this area, and attention. Oh, I found, you know, really there's amazing things that are available for the pleasure of Krishna. And so in our ashram, we try to, we live with a very small budget in our ashram, very, not a wealthy ashram. And, but we try to get the best we can for Krishna with that, try to put those funds there, because it was Prabhupada's instruction. Not that we have always organic to offer, but we try. Yes, Danadhar Maharaj.
To what extent could you offer things that have been already cooked? I mean, there's puffed rice, there's potato chips, there's white cereals. Did Prabhupada say anything about this?
On several occasions, see. Spoke to devotees in different capacities. There's numerous stories and numerous instructions. To some degree, especially when I talked with other cooks that were engaged in Prabhupada's service over the years, there were different examples of what they said Prabhupada liked or accepted. In general, Prabhupada Once a devotee asked Prabhupada, what do you like the most? What do you like the most? Prabhupada said, I like anything that is well prepared and cooked in Krishna consciousness. So it wasn't necessarily, although he had a taste for Bengali food because he was from a Bengali family. So he loved certain things, kachoris and shukta, singhar, certain things that he grew up tasting. But he also loved anything, he said, anything that's well prepared, he also appreciated. So for example, in India, puffed rice, the rice is handled in a certain way and then roasted in hot sand. And it blows up. So he said, my mother used to make this, and as early as 69, he said, can you make puffed rice? I said, well, you can learn. But whether it's, Barbara's organic puffed rice or Quaker's puffed rice or whatever puffed rice you have in Zimbabwe, Rhodesia, or the Ukraine. Some things he accepted. For example, oats. We have whole grains, and then we have grains that we can puff, or we can soak and flatten, or even poha. You see, that's been a little bit recalled. So there were certain things that that are acceptable, Prabhupada said, that have been slightly prepared. But that sour cream that we used in 69, then sometime later he said, you shouldn't use that. So they were off and on different instructions. What we're dealing about today is what I call principles. Details, Prabhupada gave different instructions about many different ingredients to different devotees. So it's not so important, those details. What is important, I believe, is that whatever temple you live in, you get together and you set a standard for the pleasure of the Archavigraha under the instructions of your spiritual master. And then you follow that. So it may be that some temple that's in another country will follow a little bit different. And that's okay. But we want to establish a standard for the pleasure of the Lord, again with the intent for the pleasure of the Lord, of what kind of ingredients we'll use and what ingredients we're open to using. For example, I never used quinoa or teff or amaranth in Srila Prabhupada's service because they weren't available. But these are little seed grains and things that Krishna made that are now available for the whole world to use. And so I used those in his service. But I didn't because they didn't exist when I was serving Srila Prabhupada. So we can be open to those kinds of things. But so far as potato chips, I'm quite certain Prabhupada would have said, if you're making this for the pleasure of Krishna, that he would not ask you to open a crisp package and when they can be made. Yeah. So the examples you gave are typical of, you know, all the kinds of things that are the little details that devotees will ask about. So I think it's best to check with your spiritual master for those that have spiritual masters. And for those that don't have spiritual masters, you check with the authorities and check what is the standard that we're engaging in this particular temple. And don't be surprised if you go to, you're traveling and you go to a next temple and there's some different standard. Those are the details and they're not so important. These are the things that are very important that we want to have established in all of the temples. Is that okay, Maharaj? Yes. Yes, Brahmacharyaji.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I don't know, maybe you already answered this question in a different way, but my question is regarding white and brown sugar. Mm-hmm. Using this in cooking, because again, it's different standards everywhere, but I just want to know what Srila Prabhupada used to say.
Well, actually, white sugar is brown sugar is nothing but white sugar with a little added molasses. So actually that's quite similar, but there are many different kinds of procedures for sugars, and there's many different sweeteners. For example, sugar can come from sugar cane, from sugar beet. There's sucrose, which is table sugar. Fructose is sugars from fruits. Lactose is sugar from milk. So there's different kinds of sweeteners. They're the saps that come from trees, like maple syrup and talgur. So there's many kinds of sweeteners. In the early days, again, you've hit it on the nose that there was really only white sugar and brown sugar. So when I was serious enough to ask, when I was inquiring a little bit, researching for the first cookery book that I wrote, second cookery book I wrote, I asked Prabhupada's sister Pishima when she was alive, and I was researching what was used 100 years ago in Bengal before refined sugars like white and brown sugar that were popular from the mid-60s on, pretty much globally. Because I thought, how can a rasgulla be white if you're using a dark brown sugar? So she said whatever sugar was there was used. So she, I don't know, she was from different, she lived in different places in West Bengal. So that's the answer. Prabhupada said you use it. White sugar was definitely used. Now we do have the choice of one stage less than this pure white sugar, which is pretty much, at least in the West, refined through, shaken through cow bones to bleach it, to make it white. So for about, you know, as long as I've been able to, I've been using something called turbinado sugar, or the brand name is Florida Crystals, and it's an organic cane sugar, but it's not sparkling white, it's kind of amber colored, and it is not gone through the process of shaking through the cow bones. But even that was brought up to Prabhupada and said, what can we do so it's available? So it's again that principle, you use what you can, but you find the best you can. And now, I mean, for those of you who are just coming to Vrindavan for the first time, and you see what's available in the market, you see it's, the world is becoming one big table. You see, you can get the same things here that you're getting in many other countries in the world. But originally the standard was in Goswami temples and Jagannath Puri and such, that you only serve the deity that which is available locally and fresh. You use those ingredients. For example, in Jagannath Puri, they don't use cauliflower or potato or tomato, because these were brought by the Portuguese to India. And they're not what's, so you find just those sabji that is available there. Even the kind of wood that is used to cook on is from that region. They won't use lal mirch, only they have kali mirch, no red chilies, because that isn't available from that region. So again, the examples are every temple, you establish some standard, and you honor your Archa Vigraha, and you honor your spiritual master by adhering to that standard, and then letting that also breathe to some degree with ingredients, maybe. Or maybe you won't. Maybe you'll decide this is all we're going to offer. And why are we doing this? For the pleasure of the Lord. To honor the spiritual master. That's why we do these things. We establish these standards. Is that all right? Okay.
When one devotee goes to meet the relatives, and the relatives are not devotee, they cannot cook with the proper standard. What you should do? How we can should offer to Krishna these preparations?
Could you elaborate on that question a little bit? What you mean?
For example, I go to meet my parents. I have to cook there. But the pots that I have to use are the same pots where my mother was cooking meat. Also, because she is not a devotee, she decides the food. Because she make the shopping also, I can use just what
sure.
So, how is possible with this standard offered to Krishna? Offered to Krishna. I think that is possible to offer this food to Krishna.
These again are practical questions, and it's really kind of a common sense answer in that you do the best you can. So naturally, mother and father, there has to be some respect there. So many of us, when we associate with our family members who, you know, they've reared us and changed our diapers and done all this business for all these years, and we owe them back a certain amount of respect that we don't preach to them how nonsense they are in the kitchen, right? What we're talking about is amongst each other when we're serving the spiritual master or in the temple. But there have been many occasions where I went through a unique phase in about 15 years ago where after I wrote one cookery book, I was kind of launched into the professional food world. And so I was invited to do many different cooking engagements. So sometimes, one time in the city of Philadelphia in the United States, the mayor of Philadelphia wrote me a letter and said, please come and be a part of the Book and the Cook Festival this year. There's some restaurant we picked for hosting you, and will you come cook a meal there, and all the press will be there, like this. So it was a big function. So these people got a hold of me from a restaurant, and they weren't a vegetarian restaurant. So I said, well, you know, you may have looked at my book, and my book is about spiritual cooking. And I'm a vegetarian, and I said, I'm a really strange vegetarian because I have these unique rules that I follow in the kitchen. So I don't know how I could ever cook in your kitchen. So I actually started a dialogue with this. It was a bar and grill. And I started a dialogue with them, and you know what they did? I told them it has to be a separate kitchen. I won't cook if you have anything with eyes near me. So they cleaned, you know, they cleaned for 2 days, that kitchen, and put away all those things, and even put up a black plastic thing, So it, according to time, place, and circumstance, you just do the best you can. And what you especially do in those times is go internal. All I did was pray, Prabhupada, here somehow, maybe these people will never have gotten prasadam. Or maybe you go into a prison, huh? And you're going to a prison kitchen, and the lowest standard, the moochiest place you ever saw. But if you're going to somehow or another give people a taste of their first bite of what you've offered with love and devotion to Krishna, it's worth it. Hmm? So suppose you're giving to your family members the first taste of your best, the best prasadam that you can make in the moochiest kitchen that you've been in, no problem. You do it for the service of Krishna. Or you decide, I'm too brahminical, I can't do that. And then give it to service, some service to someone else. Or bring prasadam from some place that you think is clean. But it's a common sense thing. You know, you do the best you can, you try to be clean, and if at all possible, you can say why you're a little odd and fanatic. That this is a new level. And you know, I was just speaking with Dhananjaya Prabhu this morning. He was reading one National Geographic article, and they were speaking about longevity and how vegetarianism and what was the other element? And religion. If these are practiced within a group of people, the longevity is 5 to 10 years more. This is a very recent article. So the fact is, in the not too near future, as we continue to practice and live and imbibe these things, it's not that we just talk about them that we're so pure and. But if we really follow these things that Prabhupada gave us, you and I, everyone that's in this room tonight, no matter how old a devotee or how new, if we really take these to heart and try to live them, I'm telling you, this little room of people can do miracles in terms of spreading Prabhupada's message of Krishna consciousness right through the kitchen. Right? Does everybody agree with that? Let's do it together. Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Yes,
Prabhupada. It's not a question, it's just a question.
Yes, yes.
So, for many, many years, we are hearing you every morning to sing with the devotion. Mm. We never get tired. Mm. So you can sing for us today. We can sing with you.
Well, we do that every morning, so.
No. But it's a diversion. We are hearing you last today.
Close our eyes, let's go into meditation. And the curtain's just been swished open, and the Arch of Vigraha are there, all together. Govindam Hari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Govindam Hari Purusham Tamaham
Hare Krishna,
thank you very much.
Sweet. Oh, glories to you.